dedication, preparation, sweet spirit of cooperation, in order that things might run smoothly, that a great number might continue to benefit on a weekly and a daily basis. We're grateful for that continued dedication that many have shown for long years, and we pray that you will bless them and us with continued good service for you. In Jesus' name.
You turn to number 689. I was watching the ball game on television yesterday. One of the commercials that came on caught my attention. It was one that you may have seen. It was a young man who began to talk about the reserves. And it showed him in various uniforms. As he was in the Army, the Navy, the Coast Guard, the Marines. And as he was talking, these uniforms kept changing. And his point was that the reserves are something that takes place on the weekends, a couple of weeks during the summer, and you can go on with your other life. They won't be very much disturbed by living and serving in the reserves. The statement he made to end the commercial was, you don't have to give up one life to have the other. And I thought, what a contrast to what Jesus said. If you would live a life in Him, you must give up one life to enjoy the other. He said, whoever does not bear his own cross, come after me, cannot be my disciple. And so therefore, whoever of you does not renounce all that he has, I wish I could say to you that if you come to Jesus, you don't have to give up one life to enjoy the other. That wouldn't at all be true to the text, to the teaching of Jesus. You must give up one life to enjoy the other. But I can tell you from one who has experienced both, the life you give up doesn't compare with the one that you receive in Him. This morning, if you'd like to come to Jesus, to experience His life, to make your commitment and to be immersed into Him, or to come and to join a body of believers who are trying to do their best to serve Christ in this place and turn this community to Him. Or if you have a need that you'd like to share with this body of believers, would you come this morning? Come now while we stand and while we sing. Number 689.
Out of my bonded sorrow at night, Jesus, I come, Jesus, I come, into thy freedom glad.
We've been involved in a study of the family for the past few Sunday nights. Last Sunday night, we began to look into the Beatitudes and to translate those into marriage that we might enrich our husband-wife relationships. For those of you who were not here, by way of review, let me quickly review the first three Beatitudes as our time allowed us to study last week. Translate those into marriage so that we'll be on target for where we pick up tonight. The first Beatitude in Matthew 5 and verse 3, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." We learned that translated into marriage, that becomes, "I need you, for you complete a part of my life that I could not complete for myself." We understand by that beatitude that our mate has a complementing and a completing aspect to our own lives that we could never find alone. That as Eve became a helpmeet to Adam, as she completed and complemented his life, so it is in marriage that our mates complement and complete our relationships. Verse 4, "Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted." Translated into marriage, that becomes, "Please forgive me. I'm sorry." Because our marriages are made up of human beings, we are going to hurt one another on occasion. And when that happens, we ought to be mourning over the sense of pain and sometimes heartache that we cause in the life of our mate. And out of that sense of mourning, we go to that mate and say, "I'm sorry, please forgive me." In verse 5, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." We learn that that word meek is one of the most untranslatable words in all the Greek language. That no one English word will pick up all the ideas that this word encompasses. But we learned above all, it is control, power under control. And that when one is God-controlled, translated into marriage, this becomes, "I refuse to retaliate." Because we are hurt on occasion, our natural tendency is to retaliate and hurt back. But when we become a child of God and we become God-controlled and God is now pulling the strings in our life, so to speak, we refuse to retaliate. But we respond graciously as did Jesus when people heaped abuse on Him. That brings us down to verse 6. The fourth beatitude, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied." These words translated hunger and thirst are words that you and I are probably unfamiliar with, experientially speaking. That is, these words are something that you and I have probably never really experienced living where we are, where we do in the United States. The words translated hunger and thirst are words that describe a hunger that is so intense that one will die unless he eats soon. And the thirst that is described in this verse is a thirst so intense that the mouth has become cottony and sores have begun to break out and the body is crying out for water and one will literally die unless he drinks soon. You and I will probably never know that hunger or thirst in the United States. A few weeks ago on Sunday, I think it was a Sunday night, there was a special on television about the land of Somalia. A local evangelist here in our city, Larry Jones, is involved in a big fundraising campaign to raise money to send to Somalia. And the film clips that I saw that night on television were something like I'd never seen before. I've been to Egypt. I've seen some of the poverty and some of the hunger there, but I've never seen anything like I saw in the film clips on that television show. All of the children in Somalia, at least the ones that they showed, have little arms about this big around and little legs about that same size. Their little tummies are bloated from hunger, and there are literally thousands upon thousands that are dying every day of starvation. They say that the water is so scarce in Somalia that the average family of five receives 1 quart of water a day to live on. Literally, these words can be seen in the land of Somalia, but you and I have never known that kind of hunger, that kind of thirst. But I want you to notice the focus of where Jesus places this hunger and thirst. It's a hunger and thirst so intense, but it's focused on the righteousness of God. And the promise comes, those who have that intense hunger and thirst after the righteousness of God, they will be satisfied. In essence, they will be filled or quenched to the full. Translated into marriage, this beatitude becomes, let's do what's right regardless. More and more, I'm hearing people saying, a husband is saying, I'm leaving my wife. I just don't love her anymore. Feeling is gone. More and more I hear wives saying, I'm leaving my husband. I just don't love him anymore. I just don't feel that love. The feeling is gone. And I have to admit that whenever I hear that remark from somebody, I don't respond as graciously as maybe I ought. Because when someone makes that remark to me, they're telling me they have no idea what love encompasses. Because folks, love is not a feeling. Love is a commitment. Since when does a mother not get up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning to go and feed her crying child that is hungry just because she doesn't feel like getting up anymore? Why, no, she'll get up every time. Whether she feels like getting up or not, she'll get up every time and feed that child. Why? Because there's a commitment in her love to the welfare of that child. And she'll do anything in her power to meet the needs of that child. Because there's commitment there. She's going to do what's right regarding that child. And so it must be in marriage. We have to understand that love is not a feeling. It's a commitment. It's a commitment that says, I'm going to stay in here and stick it out and work our way through these problems regardless. I'm going to do my best to work my way through it. If you're sick with love tonight for somebody and you've got that queasy feeling in your stomach and you just can't get your mind off of them, and every time you hear their name, you know, your life just kind of lights up. I want to tell you something tonight. That feeling is going to leave you. Because that form of romantic love ebbs and flows like the tide. It comes and it goes. And if your commitment in marriage is around only as long as that feeling is there, you won't be at marriage very long. There's more to marriage than the romantic feelings of love. Love is a commitment. And this beatitude compels me to fulfill my role in the home whether I feel like it or not. I may not feel like taking over the spiritual leadership of my home as a husband, but God says that's what I must do, and I'll do what's right regardless. And if I'm a wife, I may not feel like submitting to the leadership of my husband, but I will do that because God says that's right, and I'm going to do what's right regardless. John Claypool told a story a few months ago about a woman who came in to see him. She was in her mid-30s. She'd been married over 14 years. And she sat down and she said to John Claypool, I don't love my husband anymore. Feelings gone. And there is an internal struggle going on between me and him that you just can't describe. And I want out and he wants out. And we're getting out of this thing. And I came just to inform you. And I may need some of your help in coping with what we're about to do. John Claypool began to talk with her and counsel her for the better part of an hour, and he finally got her to agree to one thing before she threw in the towel. He said, would you try a 30-day trial? You've got everything to gain and nothing to lose at this point, right? She said, right. Would you try something just for 30 days? She said, what? He said, will you go home and love your husband? She said, I just got through telling you I don't love my husband. No, I want you to go home and put into action what love really is. You know what foods he likes best. Go home and for 30 days fix those for him. You know what dress he likes to see you in. Go home and for 30 days wear those clothes he likes to see you in. You know what kind of restaurants he likes to go to. You go with him for the next 30 days. You know what kind of nightgown he likes to see you in. You wear that thing for the next 30 days. You know what kind of things he likes to do recreationally. You be a part of those things for the next 30. Just commit for 30 days. You're going to do what pleases your husband. You've been living with him 14 years, and you know what pleases him. But you cannot expect anything in return. Nothing. Zero. No response from Him. But will you just make that commitment for 30 days to go and try it, expecting nothing in return? And reluctantly she finally agreed, okay, 30 days, I'll try. And they made an appointment for 30 days later, and 30 days went and came and went, and she didn't come back. And Claypool saw her in a church service, and he pulled her off to the side after about 5 weeks, and he said, hey, what's going on? I haven't heard from you. What's happening? He said there was a radiance about her. Her face lit up. She said, I've never been so happy in all my life. He said, what are you talking about? He said, I went home and started doing that, like you said, and I expected nothing from my husband. And the first week, there was absolutely nothing that happened. And he was just watching me, skeptical of what I was doing. And about the second week, he started responding to what I was doing for him. And he started doing the things for me that I enjoy and that I like. He started doing the things for me that pleases me. And after 3 or 4 weeks, she said, I've never felt more in love with that man in my life than I do right now. I know it doesn't always work out that way. In fact, I would imagine that would be an exception. Those kind of happy endings oftentimes don't happen. But I'll tell you something. We need to give that lady credit for one thing. She decided to do what was right regardless. This beatitude translated into marriage is, I'm going to do what's right. Folks, would you go home tonight and do what's right regardless? If you don't know what's right, look in this book. It'll tell you. And then would you commit to do what's right regardless? In verse 7, we come to the fifth beatitude. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Jesus introduces early in Matthew's gospel a theme that's going to weave its way throughout the New Testament. And it's this principle. If you want to be forgiven, you must be forgiving. Jesus is going to introduce this concept right here. He's going to talk about it further in his Sermon on the Mount. And throughout the New Testament, the principle is, if you want to be forgiven, you must be forgiving. And this word translated mercy or merciful is a word that means not only to feel sorry for somebody, it means to get inside their skin and to look through their eyes and to feel with their feelings. Boy, wouldn't that help? As far as forgiveness is concerned, if we could just on occasion get inside their skin and see it the way they see it and feel it the way they feel it. I mean, wouldn't that help our tolerance and our ability to forgive if just on occasion we could see it from their perspective? Jesus says those who practice giving mercy are going to find mercy. Translated into marriage, this beatitude becomes, I will forgive you, and I'll not mention it again. Let me repeat that. I forgive you, and I will not mention it again. I think I told you several months ago about an experience Jim McWiggin had 2 or 3 years ago. And although I shared it before, it has such a poignant point to it that I want to share it again. A couple of 3 years ago, Jim McWiggin was getting on a Braniff airplane in Dallas, Texas. As he got on the airplane, he went back to his seat and he looked in there, and there was a guy seated in his seat. And he got back there and there was a seat empty there in the middle, and then his wife was seated right on the aisle. And Jim says, I got there and I looked over there and he said, Mister, I believe you're in my seat. And he said, the fellow pointed to a seat in front of him. He said, man, there are lots of seats on this airplane. Why don't you take the one here in front of me? It's empty. It's a window seat, too. And he said, well, he said, I know that there are a lot of empty seats now, but you know, Braniff, they won't leave the gate until they've sold every seat. And he said, there are lots of people out there, and this plane is going to be full, and somebody's going to come in, and they're going to say to me, you're in my seat, and I'm going to have to say to you, you're in my seat, and we're going to be, you know, I'd rather just take my seat on the front end. Is that all right? Well, boy, he said, all of a sudden, this lady, his wife, sitting on the aisles, chimed in. She says,